Blog Talk Radio.
In the beginning was the beat, and the beat was the rhythm of God, and the rhythm of God is the harmony of humanity, and where there is harmony, there is peace.
Greetings, family. We want to welcome you to the Us Lifting Us Thursday Dare to Win call. Tonight, we have another exciting, very vital topic. The topic is navigating the new reality using ancient and traditional tools. And we will finish out We Are the Drum, and then we will be right back.
So we overcome with the rhythm.
Greetings, family. Once again, we thank you so much for being on the Thursday Dare to Win call. This is a place where we have sobering discussions around the need to build a global economic cooperative to serve the needs of people of African ancestry to achieve economic self-determination. And you can, we've got a couple of different ways that you can be on this call, and that is by telephone, and you can call us by telephone with your questions or comments. Give us about 15 minutes. You can reach us at 929-477-2789, 929-477-2789, and press the number 1 on your keypad when you're ready to speak. And also by internet radio, go to www.usliftingus.com. That's www.usliftingus.com. Two different ways that you can be a part of this program. And want to greet our guest, Sister Nanana. Sister Nanana, greetings and glad to be on the air with you tonight.
Well, thank you so much, Brother Thurman. Thank you. I appreciate having this opportunity and having the opportunity to have this dialogue with the listening audience as well as you. So I'm excited to be here. Thank you.
Wonderful. Okay. Well, Sister Nanana, would you please provide us with some context or background to help us in thinking through the topic for this evening. And the topic, once again, is navigating the new reality using ancient and traditional tools.
Well, I can certainly appreciate that question that you've led into the subject with, Brother Thurman. I think it's important that we, you know, try to look at a full rounded picture of what's going on right now. So I appreciate that question. It is my perspective that currently we are living through and experiencing in what I refer to as real time. That means happening to us, with us, and around us every single day. We are living through and experiencing in real time a global shift or a global change that is affecting every possible aspect of life that you can think of or imagine. Just to give some examples, some of these aspects include, but certainly are not limited to, family life, spiritual connections or expressions, personal and work relationships, employment or earning power, let's see, social and recreational outlets, spending habits, food production. That's one that we don't often think about until something like this happens. You know, where is our food coming from? How is it being produced? Food procurement. What is our ability and our options in terms of actually having access to food, being able to buy food? Our dietary choices have been impacted in many instances, some voluntarily, some involuntarily. Just our daily living routines, the ability to access goods and services, particularly healthcare. And at the core of all of these shifts, there is the downturn of the capitalistic economy. That's, you know, very clear and very obvious, I think, to anyone at this point in time. So the economic downturn or shift is something that has been looming, kind of hanging out there in the background for several years. And I believe that that has been evidenced by our constantly growing national debt and the reduced value of the U.S. dollar internationally or globally. Now, if we take everything that I've just said, all of those elements, and add to this a president who is currently sitting in the White House, who initially said that coronavirus was a hoax, a president who is known for contradicting himself, I mean, does it on a regular basis, and whose behavior has actually earned him impeachment charges. And when you add all this together, what we have is a recipe for disaster, in my opinion. So this is our new reality. The status quo that we once knew will never return. That day and age is done and over with. So we are all being challenged to do and to be our personal best regardless of the circumstances. We are all being challenged to create or to mold a satisfying life using the raw God-given talents and skills that we have, combined with our ancestral guidance, and added to that our rich history of being able to thrive following almost any situation where we were never expected to survive. So putting all of this together, this is the sort of the background or the palette that we are having to use to paint, to draw the paint from, to start our new life experiences and to actually step up and take responsibility for shaping those new life experiences. I'm reminded of a saying that many of us are familiar with, and perhaps we've even heard from some of our elders, and that is taking the lemon and make lemonade. And that's basically the situation that we're in right now, is how do we take all of these circumstances that are impacting our very existence and threatening our very survival. And some of us may not be aware that our survival is being threatened every single day, that we are actually living during a time where we are battling and dealing with genocidal acts and not really knowing from day to day exactly what the next situation will be that's going to be thrown in our direction. And so that's the playing field at this point in time. That is the playing field. And we will come through this, and we will, I predict, come through it very strongly, because that is our history, and we will be stepping into a position of creating the what we need to have going forward and what we need to have for generations going forward, grandchildren and great and great-great grandchildren. So I hope that kind of sets the context for us of what we're going to be talking about as far as reaching back and using that rich history that we have to help us to create the tools and the initiatives that we need in order to deal with the current circumstances. Hopefully yes, that answers your question.
Yes, it did, very well. And just to continue, Sister Nanana, it sounds like you're talking about moving beyond the current coronavirus pandemic. Can you be more specific?
Yes, you're very accurate, Brother Thurman. Yes, you are exactly accurate. What I am referring to is definitely moving past it. And, you know, this is not a situation that we are going to be staying stuck in. I have a judgment that that there are initiatives that are being literally birthed as we are speaking now to assist us in doing that. So certainly I'll speak to that and try to be more specific for sure. Most of us are familiar with the the African Sankofa symbol, and know that it represents returning to our roots and our cultural heritage in order to obtain or receive guidance and exposure to methodology and tools that will aid us in moving forward with our lives or whatever venture that we're involved in. In other words, success in moving forward in our cultural traditions, success in moving forward is hinged to or tied to, first of all, reaching back to ensure that sound values and a foundation based on integrity and valuing human life are at the core of every forward move that we make. So when we reach back, that is what we're going to find, that ancient African cultures were based on, that they found that these principles of high morality were what would really provide the guidance going forward and the strong foundation that was needed in order to move forward. Now, many of us, particularly those who have participated in what might be referred to as the African-centered community or movement, often speak of Sankofa, and I'm sure, Brother Thurman, you're familiar with Sankofa as well.
That's great.
So, yes, thank you. I got an ashe on that. Now we get to actually do Sankofa. You know, as a result of this pandemic, we have been placed, African descended people all around the globe, have been placed in a situation where we have been given an opportunity to walk our talk. And I really think that we need to adjust our perspectives and our thinking and our visualization to understand that no matter how ugly or scary this pandemic may look, that this is an opportunity. This is an opportunity for us to actually act on Sankofa. We're past the stage of lip service and philosophizing. We cannot afford to continue to do that. We are at the point where it's time to reach back, to understand those guiding principles from the ancient culture, and to actually start to use those as the foundation for moving forward and sculpting and rebuilding a new life for ourselves. So that's where I see that we are right now and how Sankofa relates to this whole situation. And thank you for that question.
Yes. Okay. Well, you definitely are providing a lot of valuable information that's vital for the time that we're in. And family members, you can certainly participate in the conversation. And you can reach us at 929-477-2789, 929-477-2789, and press the number 1 on your keypad when you're ready with a comment or question. And we're going to take a short break, and then we will come back and continue with the conversation where Sister Nanana left off. Welcome back, family. We want to continue with the call. And once again, we invite you to participate with your comments or questions at 929-477-2789 and press the number 1 on your phone when you're ready with a comment or question. And Sister Nanana, you were just providing us, you know, some very good information. And please tell us more about reaching back and the tools or methods that we can access from doing this.
All right. Thank you for the lead in on that, Brother Thurman. And so what I'm sharing this evening is that by studying ancient African culture, we have seen evidence that the acknowledgement of a higher power or deity was at the center of every social or community construct. Okay, this is evident because a higher power is always acknowledged along with the deceased ancestors before any event or meeting begins. That is part of the tradition. And so for those of us who are familiar with that, we understand that that's very ingrained, the whole pouring of libations, even down to the point of having ancestral altars or shrines as part of the home or the residence. Every home or every residence or domicile had an area or a section in it where reverence was paid to the deity or to the ancestors. So, you know, that is a major piece that when we reach back and we start to look at what is valuable and what's important for us to bring forward from our ancient culture and to have as a part of everything we do, that this acknowledgement is important. And I think that any of us who have, if we sit down and honestly think about our exposure in the various corporate arenas, our exposures in just work life in general, in this Western culture, that is not a part of it. That is definitely not a part of it. Also, another element that we'll find as we look back into our history is that the most highly valued commodity, the single most highly valued commodity, was considered to be human life. That this was held in higher esteem than any of the minerals, you know, any gold or platinum or anything else, that human life was valued over and above everything. And here again, what we're exposed to in Western culture does not reflect that. So we are really at a point now where we have to reach back to those ancient values and those ancient concepts and to start actually using them in order to build a new future for ourselves. So now the value of the human life, this was demonstrated, you know, one of the best examples that I can give was the birth of a child. All of the celebratory events that went along with that, as well as the preparation even before the child was born, the divination work that was done, all of the attention that was paid to asking for guidance and information as to who is this child coming forth. What will their purpose be, as well as the naming ceremonies. So all of these things are indications as to the absolute importance and value of human life. Also, ancient African cultures practice placing the well-being of the whole or the community above that of the individual. Now, some of us will recognize that as being Ubuntu. I am because we are because I am. But here again, how different is this from the culture that we have been exposed to and that we have been operating in for how many years that is very, very opposite from what our true nature is. So this helps us to understand how material wealth or possessions could have been shared among many people in those ancient cultures, and why our ancient ancestors viewed land and resources such as water as belonging to God, and that no one person could own either land or any of the resources because they were there to be shared by everyone, a very, very different perspective from what we've been exposed to, particularly in capitalism, and what has been spread all around the globe. So just think of the impact that that has had on us. So now with all this said, how does all of this relate to successfully working through the pandemic? I think that's the real point. We are being positioned right now to actively practice or use our tool, Sankofa. That is a tool for us by reclaiming our communal and our cooperative lifestyle and all of the values that go along with that. We come from a history of living communally and cooperatively in every aspect of life. So we have been positioned to pool our resources in order to gain economic stability, thereby enabling us to build a viable cooperative community. So you see, the way that I'm looking at our current circumstances with this pandemic is that we have been set up not to fail, but we have been set up to thrive, provided we reclaim who we are and start doing the things that we as African descended people are supposed to do. The current state of the world economy tells us clearly that capitalism works only for the wealthy few at the top of the triangle. I mean, that's real clear. In capitalism, you have to have an underclass in order for it to work. So the reality is that capitalism was never designed to accommodate or to provide a truly comfortable life or standard of living for the workers or what might be called the larger number of people whose labor produces the profit or what we might know as surplus value. It was never intended to do that. It was intended to keep those people in that position at the bottom and to continue to exploit and to use their labor as well as their intellectual talents. So clearly, we must implement a cooperative economy or return to yet another economic downturn in the future. I mean, if we don't do this now, we are setting ourselves up to continue running on that same treadmill and to fall even deeper into an economic downturn. So what is all of this leading up to? From my perspective, it's leading up to us lifting us, ULU. Us Lifting Us Economic Development Cooperative has definitely devised a very precise methodology for building a cooperative economy specific to meet the needs of African descended people all around the globe. So now to tie this all together, I'm just going to focus on a couple of areas. So should I continue, Brother Thurman?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, because where I feel that you're going is part of our survival strategy. Yes, we've got to make sure
that
so much that we need to make it a part of our entire lifestyle and our survival strategy. So continue on.
Oh, for sure. And you know, we are at the point where we have been pushed to the wall. We have definitely been pushed to the wall, and this is how we take that lemon and we make lemonade. So when we started this dialogue, part of what I said in response to your question about history or context was to make reference to us being called on at this time to put forth our very best, our personal best, and to allow our talents to come to the forefront and to start actually using those talents. Now, Us Lifting Us Economic Development Cooperative provides us with a pathway or what might be called a method or methodology for doing just that. And I'll try to outline these steps as briefly as possible. So the steps briefly are, first of all, pooling money from the membership purchase of shares or unit, you know, simply putting all of that money in one place at the same time is what we mean when we say pooling. Secondly, to then use the money to create cooperative businesses that are tailored to meet the need for specific goods and services and create jobs for our community is what the second step looks like. And then thirdly, distribution of the profits, reinvestment of funds to ensure that continued growth of businesses, and making contributions to selected charities. That would all be in that third step, and then the cycle just starts over again. And by doing this, by following this very basic cooperative model, we have maximum opportunity to provide care and comfortable living for all of those who are invested and involved in the cooperative economic process. Now, there are active roles for members to play in all steps of this process. So all along the way, there are definitely contributions that members can make. And here's where their talent and their expertise comes in, because through the membership committee of ULU, every single member has the opportunity to take on an active role and to be creative in any number of projects and any number of committees. And we need to have those talents in order to move forward and to continue to be successful. So this process provides an ideal way for us to practice Sankofa, the process that I've just mentioned with those three steps. It provides an ideal way for us to practice Sankofa. That is going back into our history, fetching the ancient framework of providing for the needs of a community through cooperative economics. It sounds simple, and actually it is simple. This is our history, and it is perfectly normal and natural for us to come together in a cooperative venture, a venture that's designed to meet the needs of our community, both present and future. This is who we are as a people. The whole capitalistic model really does not feed us, does not nurture us, does not allow us to be who we really are. So our history and the value system accompanying that history, that is our tool. Those are the most powerful weapons that we have, because that takes us into being who we are and to literally unleashing the creativity and the wherewithal that we have to take care of ourselves and to build for future generations. So ULU is built on a foundation of principles that support economic success for all African descended people. So I'll stop at that point, Brother Thurman, and ask you if that did address your question.
Oh, yes. Oh, absolutely it did. And there's so much that would put us in the position that we must be in, because if we don't adopt the ancient ways and the culture, the history, the spirituality, as well as knowing, as you said, that that the cooperative economics is natural and normal. And it's right for us. It feels right. We've got a couple of callers that have something to. They've got a question or comment with regard to the conversation tonight. So if you're okay, we'll just get to these callers, and then you could provide more information.
Yeah, let's hear what they have to say. Uh huh.
Yeah. All right. So the first caller, the last four numbers of your telephone number is 5921, 5921. Please give us your name and tell us where you're calling from and your question or comment.
Okay, my name is Abdul Halim Nick. I'm calling from Chester, Pennsylvania. My question is, that sounds great. I listened to the explanation. It sounds very nice. I've thought about this a long time myself. But the thing I have come across is getting out the message, that message to the audience, to the masses. and making it look attractive enough for them to buy into or practice. That was my challenge.
Good question. Sister Nanana, please give us your thoughts on the brother's question.
Well, thank you for that comment, brother. And you have identified a piece that is a constant challenge. And you're right. How do you make this look attractive, especially to those of us who our perspectives and our viewpoints have been sort of tainted by this Western culture? You know, we've been dipped in the vat, so to speak. And so it's necessary that we shed some of that Western culture perspective in order to be able to see cooperative economics for the jewel that it really is. And I don't have a real pat answer or response for you. And I will honestly say that the marketing that goes around cooperative economics, how do we dress this and present it in such a way that it looks alluring, that it looks enticing, that it looks like something that people will say, "Ooh, yeah, wow, hey, I really want to do this. I don't want to be left out. I'm going to, you know, run and jump and get involved in this right away and be totally committed." That is a tough piece, and it's one that we are constantly trying to work and to rework. And so we invite you and others in the listening audience and within the ranks of our membership, if you have ideas around how to market and how to present cooperative economics to our potential member and member owners so that it is something that looks attractive, I guarantee you that we are open to hearing that. And we will continue, as the executive board of ULU, we will continue to look more aggressively into marketing campaigns that will address this not only from an educational standpoint, but from a perspective of tapping into the emotion and touching the heart of our African descended people. Because if we can tap into the emotions and we can touch the heart of our family, that's when we'll get the largest contingency of people who are willing to step up and be a part of this cooperative venture. And I'm pleased to hear you say that you do recognize the benefit of cooperative economics. And I think that there are more people out there such as yourself who do and who are looking for a model such as the one that ULU represents. They're looking for a place to be involved with cooperative economics. And so we are constantly working to find ways that we can make ourselves known so that those individuals can find us and that we can find them. A lot of that is done through social media and other forms of advertising as well. So please know that we are constantly working on that, but it's not an easy nut to crack. I would have to admit that. And thank you so much for your question.
All right, caller, we thank you so much once again. And we want to include another caller that's on the line. And this is the caller. The last four numbers are 317-631. 7-6, please give us your name and tell us where you're calling from and your question or comment.
Greetings, Brother Thurman and Sister Nanana. This is Brother Kimbizi from Atlanta. I'm
always
enjoying the program
to hear your voice.
So much tonight. And I was watching the news a little earlier, and it seems once again our community is convulsing. Now it has to do with this brutal murder of Brother George Floyd in Minneapolis. And this script just keeps playing like it's in some kind of a loop. It seems to me that much of this has to do with the lack of powerlessness in our community. And it's that powerlessness that makes us vulnerable for opportunists to aggress against us, right? And so my question is, how does having an organization like ULU, a global mechanism of both international and national cooperatives, give us as people of African ancestry the power to protect ourselves and to elevate ourselves in a way that other communities don't think it's okay to do us harm? Is there a connection there?
Wow, you've really hit upon a major piece, Brother Kimbizi, and thank you so much for stepping up and putting that topic out on the table to be discussed, because it is on the heart, the mind, the drumbeat of, I would say, the vast, very vast majority of African descended people at this point in time. As a matter of fact, I'll just digress a little bit. There are a couple of chat groups that I'm a part of that are based in the motherland, and they are buzzing with this most recent, as you said, just out and out obvious, brutal taking of that brother's life. And, you know, one of the people asked the question, you know, why do you all stay there? You need to come home, was the comment that one of them was making. But getting back to the question that you asked, is there a connection? Yes, most definitely there is a connection, because when we position ourselves in such a way that it is clear, crystal clear, and very obvious, not only to ourselves, but to others that view us and to others that we interact with, that one, that we are a part of a very solid and identifiable ethnic group and community. See, right now we are not seen as being united. We are seen as being scattered and not all being of one mind. However, being invested in ULU and participating in the cooperative economic model that ULU is presenting, that is one of the things that we will have, is that we will have a presentation globally that we are all part of this very dynamic and very viable cooperative economic community. We will have more identity, is basically what it amounts to. right now the identity is questionable. The second thing is dealing very realistically with the world that we live in. Dollars and economic stability represent power. And so when we position ourselves so that we have economic stability, so that we have stepped in and stepped up and taken total responsibility for being able to feed ourselves, to house ourselves, to educate our children, not asking anyone else to take responsibility for our children. When we take care of our sick, when we have our own hospitals, when we take care of our elderly and take care of them in a manner traditionally that shows them ultimate respect because they have walked the path before us. When we do all of those kinds of things, then we wield a certain amount of power and homage and respect. And Ulu provides us with the ultimate opportunity. The opportunity is there to do that through the cooperative economic model, through the model of family economics that Ulu provides us. So those are the two things that stand out for me. And yes, there is a connection between building this global cooperative economy and regaining, being able to rightfully demand and being provided the respect and the homage that we deserve and that we need. Right now, our lives are not valued. And we are the only ones who can change that. Nobody else can fix that for us. And the way that those things are done in this world is that you show total ability to take care of yourself. I think that's what it boils down to. At least that's the way I see it. And thank you for asking the question.
Okay. Yes, thank you, caller. Sister Nanana, we do have another caller. And that caller, the last four numbers are 3440, 3440. Please give us your name and tell us where you're calling from with your question or comment.
Greetings, Brother Thurman and Sister Nanana. This is Brother Shibaka. I am calling from Baltimore, Maryland. Really fascinating program. I wanted to contribute and to I believe Brother Kambizi's question dealing with our methodology and how we outreach and whether that in and of itself provided a sort of a safety net to some degree. And all I just wanted to add and remind people that you have China, which is the second largest economy in the world. You have Chinese who far exceed the kind of respect here as foreigners, barely can speak English. But they're being represented by a very strong and powerful nation, and that allow them to be able to set up Chinatowns and all other kind of towns using a method not necessarily entirely cooperative, but similar as they navigate and gain access and utilize the commercial vehicles that you find here. And if we look at Israel, Israel isn't even as large as China, but the Jewish members of this society and the kind of influence that they assert are barely, 24th of the number of people in this country as we have, But yet that little tiny country is Israel allowed many Jewish people the opportunity and to wield strength economically as well as politically. So we have some current models that are non-African. All right, so look at what would happen if we utilize those models to extend the kind of commerce, interaction, cultural interaction, family interaction, then utilize that in sustaining the kind of strength to protect ourselves. So in protecting ourselves, it almost demand the kind of model and structure that Ulu is doing with its family-oriented cooperative and having it on a global level. So I really appreciate the topic that you all are raising, and then particularly the insight. And we do have some examples if people needed that, even though it's not the kind of examples that shows the extent of what we're doing, but the model that we have seen based on our historical experience. Thank you very much for giving me the opportunity to talk.
Thank you, Brother Shabaka, and your comments are well taken. Thank you for adding to the discussion. So, all right. Do we have any more questions or comments?
Not at the moment, Sister Nanana. So can carry us on to the end of the hour.
Okay. Well, thank you so very much, Brother Thurman. And I appreciate you guiding us through this topic and this discussion this evening. I know that we're winding down, so I'll try to be brief. A couple of things. First of all, I just want to ensure that the listening audience knows how to be in touch with Us Lifting Us, how to be in touch with Ulu. Our website is www.usliftingus.com. www.usliftingus.com. We do have an email address. It's info@usliftingus.com. That's info@usliftingus.com. We can also be reached by phone at 404-592-2780. 404-592-2780. And the final comment that I would like to make is that I'd just like to share a little bit from our 10-point appeal and plan for the new black economy. The Ulu 10-point appeal and plan for the new black economy puts in sort of a capsule of 10 basic steps, and I won't go through all 10 of them. We won't have time tonight to let you know what some of our foundational building blocks are. So current events and the general unrest of the times call for radical change. The following points provide practical and necessary steps for a new and positive existence for us today and for future generations. Number one, as black people, we take full responsibility for the economic destiny of our communities and nations. Number two, black persons and black institutions, especially the black church, join together as members in a large-scale cooperatively owned business enterprise to pool our resources. Number three, this cooperatively owned business enterprise is reflective of our unique culture and interest in the world. Number four, the governance and legal form of the cooperative accommodate democratic principles, one member, one vote with elected membership. Number five, only members of the cooperative and not the public have the opportunity to secure ownership units, that is, equity, in the business enterprise with the potential to amass billions of dollars for community development. Number six, the cooperative focuses on opening and operating businesses in local communities that provide needed goods and services, create new jobs, stimulate additional business activity, and yield a fair profit. The cooperative is driven to duplicate and expand into hundreds and eventually thousands of businesses, all owned and controlled by the collective. Number eight, the net profits from overall cooperative success are used to reinvest for the distribution of grants and endowments and direct returns or dividends to members and owners of the cooperative. Number nine, the large-scale cooperatively owned, group-owned business enterprise functions as a catalyst and central element in building and sustaining the new black economy, one that gives power to our people. And number 10, Us Lifting Us Economic Development Cooperative, LLC, serves as the aforementioned model. These 10 points form the basis for black economic empowerment. The security and welfare of our people starts with our determination to control the economics of our communities and nations. Black people and black people alone hold the key to the gateway leading to their freedom. This is a quote from the Philosophy and Opinions of Marcus Garvey, 1923. Thank you so much for listening this evening, and thank you, Brother Thurman, for being such an excellent host and guide through the topic this evening. You're much appreciated.
Ashe, and thank you, Sister Nanana, and all of the Ulu family and the listeners and all the participation, and we'll be back here next Thursday. Make sure that you go to our webpage, usliftingus.com, and we are, our liberation requires our participation.